When I sit down and I sit there with TikTok or Instagram, what's gonna hijack my attention?
You as a content creator, at a minimum, are competing against 150,000 pieces of content.
So it feels like what you're saying, Brendan, is you sell to the micro, but actually you want to entertain the macro.
Our team's done about 10,000 hours of research into these formats. And what it shows you is that there's these clear, proven structures to tell a story. A majority of communication that we do as human beings is really delivered to the subconscious. Facial expressions, body cues, environment, tonality, the pacing, eye contact. If you want to be an effective communicator in any format, on any platform, you have to understand the dynamics of human psychology and human behavior at some level to become an expert. There's a guy that loves trains and he's like super viral. It's his enthusiasm that it kind of spills through the screen to kind of cross over to you. AI is just a tool. And it's a very powerful tool, and a lot of people are going to be using it to create social media content. But if you don't understand the fundamentals of storytelling, then you're not going to be successful even if you have AI. It's a retention game.
Brendan Kane, welcome to the podcast. It's good to have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to connect with you and everybody that's tuning into this today.
Thank you for taking the time. So we kick off the same way every time, and I'm going to hit you with a big open question and see where we end up, Brendan. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
Yeah, so my name is Brendan Kane. I'm probably most well known for my first two books, 1 Million Followers, How I Built a Massive Social Audience in 30 Days, and Hook Point, How to Stand Out in a 3-Second World. And kind of what I do, I think that my whole kind of mission ever since I started my career and even beyond that is like, how do you stand out at the highest levels? Like, and I'm known for social media, but a lot of kind of those principles and the things I think about apply to offline, but it's, you know, how do you stand out so that you can grab the attention that you need in order to get your message across, the impact that you want to have, your service, whatever that may be. And you know, with the dedications for all three of my books, it's all the same as I believe there's people all over the world that have the ability to transform the world in a positive way, and their voices are not being heard, whether they're being suppressed for any number of reasons, or maybe they just don't have the skill sets and the knowledge and know-how to get their message or their impact out there. So that's where I say, you know, it's really how do you stand out at that highest level so that you can have the impact that you're looking to have.
And when you see it online, let's talk about maybe a digital world. What do people typically get wrong about trying to stand out?
I would say the biggest thing is they're saying the same thing in the same way as everybody else. Is people, you know, we were talking before we started, like you guys are doing a sales book. Obviously sales has been talked. I mean, you Google sales and there's probably a billion results. It's the same thing with me with social media. You type in social media or social media expert or whatever it may be, there's billions of results that come up. And you and I know we have a unique perspective on kind of how we approach, you know, our expertise and, you know, our skill set and our companies and knowledge, but the market doesn't know that. And if we come in and say, well, I'm a social media expert or I'm a sales expert, most people will turn off because they've been inundated with so many different messages. And that's where, you know, you have to kind of look at the larger landscape of what everybody's saying, even if it's like, and this is again, where people go wrong is they see themselves as a, you know, a more experienced expert or somebody that has more knowledge than other people in the market. And they think just because of that, that they're going to stand out, when in reality is you'll look at a lot of people in the world in your industry that probably have less experience than you, or you know you're better at or can help your clients more than them, but they're winning because they're standing out. So I think the first place to really make sure you're not falling into this trap or mistake is you'll look at the overarching market. What are the patterns of what people are saying? And making sure that you're positioning yourself as you're going into that first level of communication in a different way than all of the other information that they've been exposed to.
And then when we think about virality in 2025, it feels like going viral is actually a little bit different to what it might have been in the early noughties. Is a businesses or like a thought leader, is their goal to go viral? Like, and what could be some of the kind of side effects from that happening?
It's a great question. And the reality is we first have to kind of define what going viral means, because it can mean different things for different people. You know, some people will think about Mr. Beast and like getting 100 million views is going viral, which is obviously going viral, but that doesn't mean like a dentist or a lawyer or a doctor has to get 100 million views. Like, for some people, getting, you know, 100,000 people to view their content is going viral. For some people, it's 50,000. For some people, it will be millions. So first, understand kind of that dynamic, that there's no like clear delineation that says it has to reach this threshold in order to go viral. I think it goes back to what we were talking about in terms of the impact of it. So I would say is like, if you're going to be producing content for social media, and you know, let's talk about organic first. And if we want to talk about paid social media, we can. But from an organic perspective, like, why are you going to go through the time, energy, and allocation of resources if you're not going to try and break through with your content? Now, I never give the advice to people to say go viral for the sake of going viral. Like, don't do prank videos or dog videos or things of that nature if they have no relation to the subject matter that you talk about or you specialize in. And some people will say, well, Brendan, I'm in a niche industry. You know, I'm a nutritionist. I'm a lawyer. I'm a real estate agent. I can't go viral. The reality is any subject matter can go viral with the right context behind it. Like, we took a hand doctor, super niche with no social media experience, and helped her get over 700,000 followers, starting from zero, starting from scratch. So just know that your subject matter can break through. It can go viral. And again, it's that question is like, if you're going to take that time, energy, and resource, why not design it to have maximum impact and truly break through?
So when you're sitting in these strategy meetings, Brendan, or you're planning a campaign for one of your clients, what are some of the questions that have been thrown around the table that maybe some of the audience could ask themselves to kind of define, well, what is it we need to offer? What's our message? How do we stand out? And what could we do that would have some kind of attempt at virality?
I think that the biggest lesson that most people need to learn is what we call the generalist principle. Most people are operating off of a marketing paradigm and marketing strategies that were designed pre-social media, where it says, design a specific piece of content for a specific audience. So, you know, understand your niche and create a piece of content that speaks to that niche. Now, that can still apply in paid assets, but I'll explain why that in just a minute, of like why even going that approach can lose results or efficiencies. But the reality is like we talked about, like, what does it mean to go viral in 2025? Like, how do you actually go viral? Like, how do you get millions and millions of people to consume your content? And it's not easy, but it's pretty simple. It's simplistic in terms of how and why that happens. And there's one thing that controls that, and it's the algorithms. And there's a lot of misinformation about the algorithms. There's a lot of demonization of the algorithms because there's a lot of frustrated content creators that don't feel like they are getting the attention they deserve. And I really feel that pain because I've seen it with our own content and learning this model that we've built and also working with clients all around the world. But the reality is the algorithms just have one goal, and that's to keep people on the platform longer. It's retention. Because if we look at the fundamental business aspect of how these platforms work, it's the longer people spend on the platforms, the more ads they can serve, the more profit they generate. So what they're looking for from a content perspective is, what is a piece of content that I can see to millions of people and grab and hold their attention for as long as possible so that I can serve more ads? Now, the challenge is we're at about 5 billion people on social media. Now, not every single one of them are producing content on a daily basis, but it shows you the economy of scale. Like, if any one of us opened up our favorite app, whether it was Instagram or YouTube or Facebook or TikTok, there's probably at least 150,000 pieces of content that could serve to us based upon all the accounts that we follow and the content that we've engaged with. So you as a content creator, at a minimum, are competing against 150,000 pieces of content from the standpoint of the algorithm looking at it is like, well, is your piece of content have a higher likelihood of grabbing and holding attention of your audience versus the other 150,000 pieces of content out there? So when we talk about the generalist principle, it really breaks that concept of creating a niche piece of content for a niche audience, because the minute it pushes outside your niche audience, it's going to fall flat. On top of that, there's content that are fighting for attention against your niche audience that are probably better designed for storytelling than how you're constructing your message. Because one of the biggest traps people fall into is basically thinking that organic social media is a avenue to create advertisements and, you know, kind of use your social media profile as a website. People don't log on to social media saying, I want to see a great ad. Like, I want to see a great branded piece of content. They want to be engaged. They want to be entertained. So the generalist principle looks at content to say, we still want to serve your niche audience. Like, we still, you know, because again, we're in this for the business and growing the business. So we still want at some level to design our message to connect with that niche audience. But how do we make our subject matter also interesting to the general audience? Like, how do we make it interesting to people that may not be thinking about it, searching about it, or may not have even thought that it would be interesting to them? So what does that kind of look like? One of the examples that I give is there's a YouTuber, Graham Stephan, that teaches finance to millennials. So he teaches the finance principles to an audience that typically are not super interested in finance. I mean, finance as it is not a super sexy subject matter. So what does he do? You know, one of his most viewed videos is how I bought a Tesla for $78 a month. So in that video, he's not diluting what he wants to achieve, his underlying expertise or message. He's teaching the principles of financing a car to that millennial audience, but he's contextualizing it in such a way that makes it interesting to the wider possible audience. So if he were to contextualize that message of like, let me teach you the five basic principles you need to know in financing a car for a millennial, it would have gotten 10,000 views instead of 10 million views. So then some people will say, well, Brendan, that makes sense, but I don't want to reach millions of people. I want to sell products. I want to generate leads and things of that nature. So another example of that is a luxury real estate agent in Manhattan named Ryan Serhant. Now, he has a show on Netflix, but he really mastered social media before that Netflix show, and he was on a show called Million Dollar Listing. But I could point to so many celebrities and actors and people with TV shows that just don't have a social audience because they don't understand social. But what he does is so brilliant with applying this generalist principle. So his core business is selling luxury real estate properties in Manhattan, New York. So I think the floor price of a property his company will represent is like $15 million. All the way up to like $250 million, like the most expensive homes in the world. So what he does is he creates YouTube videos like, let me take you on a tour of a $6 million closet. Let me take you on a tour of a $250 million ranch. So what he's doing is, again, anybody would be interested to see what a $6 million closet looks like or a $250 million ranch. And he knows that on a monthly basis, he's generating millions and millions and millions of views by broadening out what he does, making it accessible and interesting to the wider population. But he knows that if less than 1% is his core buyer, like, he's beating out his competition. You know, they won't be able to keep up with him. And he's even said that he has sold $30 million properties off a single YouTube video. So it's really, how do we take our core expertise, make it interesting to that wide population, but at the same time, contextualizing it in such a way that speaks to our core audience so that we can really drive that business result? Because if we don't, if we just create a niche message for a niche audience, the minute the algorithm tries to seed it to somebody outside of that, it's going to fall flat. Now, I mentioned the paid aspect is most people think, okay, well, I can still do that with paid, and paid media does allow you to skip the algorithm and put content in front of people. But what you have to realize is that content is still competing against organic content, because it's allowing you to skip the line, but it's not guaranteeing that people are going to watch the content. So even in those principles of the generalist principles, it still can't apply to paid in terms of understanding how to tell an effective story to even get your core audience to pay attention and interested to what you have to say.
I love that, what you were saying about skipping the line, but it doesn't guarantee entry. So it feels like what you're saying, Brendan, is you sell to the macro, you sell to the micro, but actually you want to entertain the macro. You want to kind of have everybody. So let's I know hooks and gaining attention is kind of one of your niches. So how do we grab everybody's attention? What the things that when I sit down and I sit there with TikTok or Instagram, maybe subconsciously, what am I attempting to, what problems am I attempting to solve? What's gonna hijack my attention?
Well, the biggest thing at a macro level is storytelling. So it's like you have to tell a compelling story that grabs, holds attention, and delivers on some type of promise or value. It's the same thing as when we think about when we sit down to watch something on Netflix or go to a movie, is like there is a promise of a story. It's the only reason we're willing to sit down. So how do we kind of look at that from a social media lens? So what we do is, so we spent the past like 5 or 6 years building a viral content model. And the core crux of the model and the reason that's so successful is what we're doing is we're studying what type of storytelling patterns or structures that are out there that have proven success. So what we call them is formats. Other people can call them series, but they're kind of proven storytelling structures that have proven to you that they can grab and hold attention. It doesn't guarantee that if you use it, that it will, and I'll get into kind of why and how you can overcome that in a minute. But what we're doing is we're looking at these formats. So I'll give you some examples so you can kind of grab your attention. And I'm going to give examples that you've probably seen. We'll start with short form. So one of the most popular ones that I guarantee you've seen on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube Shorts is Man on the Street. And it's just that. You approach a random stranger on the street and you interact with them in some way. Like in the UK, Simon Squibb is killing it with this format, saying, what is your dream? You know, do you have a dream? School of Hard Knocks has done this, of asking entrepreneurship questions to very successful people. I have a friend that's a photographer that's built an audience of 20 million people, where he approaches random strangers in the street and offers them a professional photo shoot, and the story unfolds from there. So that is an example of a format. Another example that I'm sure you and everybody tuning in have seen is called Two Characters, One Light Bulb. So it's the same person playing two different characters. They play a novice and they play an expert, and they have a conversation with each other debunking like a common myth about something. So there's a woman named Erica Kohlberg that does this with legal finance. So she breaks down the fine print of what happens when your AirPods break, what happens when your flight gets canceled, things of that nature. Mark Tilbury uses this as well. So those are just two examples. Now, our team's done about 10,000 hours of research into these formats, and we've done analysis on over 220. So I don't want to kind of give these two examples and be like, these have to be the examples that you use. There's so many of them out there. But what it shows you is that there's these clear proven structures to tell a story. You know, Man on the Street, there is a story unfolding. Even like Simon Squibb saying, you know, go approaching a random stranger on the street, like, what is your dream? Like, first off, that interaction with Man on the Street, you don't know what's going to happen. It's one of the reasons that it works. But then you also want to know the story of this person and how it's going to unfold and how this interaction is going to unfold. Now, as I mentioned, once you identify this format, it doesn't guarantee that you're going to have success, even though, like with Man on the Street, Simon does it successfully. My friend Alex Stemp, the photographer, School of Hard Knocks, uses it. 99% of people will fail in trying to kind of duplicate that success. And the reason is why. Like, why would that be? It kind of goes back to when you think about movies. Is like, is every movie that you sit down to watch good? No. I would say like 6 or 7 out of 10 movies are probably like a waste of time, or you're just like, why did I sit down and watch this? It's because it's the expression of the use of that format. So I went to film school. Like, I started in the film industry. And when you go to film school, they teach you the storytelling elements of creating a film. So you learn directing, you learn cinematography, you learn writing, you learn screenwriting, you sit down and watch movies and dissect them. So the same thing happens in the creative model that we built, is you take a format like Man on the Street, and what you do is you'll take an account like Alex Stemp or Simon, and what we'll do is we'll create a spreadsheet out of it, and we'll take the 10 most viewed videos in that format, the 10 kind of average views, and the 10 underperformers. And what we're doing is we're doing a cross analysis to understand, well, what's happening in those breakthrough performance, those high performers, because most people will look at a Simon or an Alex or like an influencer and think that every video they make goes viral. It's not the case. Outside of like Mr. Beast or maybe Mark Rober, that's not the case. They don't always go viral. So the idea is, like, how can you learn, like, what's the successful use of that format versus the unsuccessful use? And typically what we're looking at is the contextual elements, the storytelling elements, and less about the content itself. So it can be things like pacing, captions, title cards, what happens in the first 3 seconds. What is the tonality? Like in Man on the Street format, it's the reaction. Like, what type of reaction do you get from the individual, which is a big performance driver. But what we're doing is we're really studying and understanding, like, what makes this format tick, in the same way where I went to film school and it's like, well, what makes a good movie tick? Or if you sit down and learn a musical instrument like the piano, you don't just start out like learning original scores or writing original scores. You start with sheet music and you understand the dynamics of like what makes that successful versus unsuccessful. And then you can kind of go from there. Does that make sense?
It feels like you're talking about it like it's an art form, which I would agree it is. And actually, maybe the reason for virality or success is, let's take Simon Squibb for example. How much of that would you say is down to him and his persona, and how much is down to what happens behind the scenes when it comes to caption, editing, edits, whatever it is?
Yeah, so the first part of, so he has, you know, an advertising and branding background, so he has a competitive edge. And you know, somebody coming from, and I'm sure you see this from your background, but somebody coming from an advertising background myself, like, you can see, like, he kind of has picked up on some of these nuances just from his gut kind of instinct at doing it in other disciplines. But there, I think that there's a big part where he understands the dynamic of the communication and the art form of going into it. But I will say again, like everybody else, he started at zero. So it's not like his persona just automatically translated and he goes viral. Like, there has to be that execution of the nuance of it. So I think that first off, if you watch, and you know, people can do this, like this exercise that we just talked through is like, go and even if you don't want to create a spreadsheet, go to one of Simon's accounts and look at a video that has 10 million views versus one that has a few hundred thousand views. And you will see a clear dynamic with that. I think Simon does an amazing job of understanding the spacing and the framing of that interaction. Because again, a big part of the Man on the Street format is that interaction, the reaction of the person. If that reaction isn't there, it's going to fall apart. But Simon also does an amazing job of integrating himself. So he's building his personal brand, because I've seen a lot of people use Man on the Street where they're not necessarily associated with the content that they're doing. They're kind of just the vehicle of telling that story. So I think that in his format, I think there's a lot of on-camera stuff that happens before it even gets to the editing room. And then there is definitely dynamics in terms of the editing that really shift the kind of storytelling element. Now, I don't know Simon, I don't know his team, so I don't know how much of it is kind of natural from the background in advertising versus how much is actually kind of the learning the science and social dynamic of it. But going back to what you said, there, it is really an art form, but there's also, you know, a scientific aspect of how you kind of look at these things.
And I think this Man on the Street one is quite interesting, because people see that and that's something that everybody will be familiar with. I've always been quite skeptical of, is that true? Is it false? Would you say that in order to have real success with something, it's got to be authentic, completely original, or actually that some of the best can be recreated, it can be worked at, and you could treat it like you would in the same way that you're shooting The Godfather 2, and you're probably getting many different cuts from many different angles.
Yeah, so specifically Man on the Street, I know a lot of the top accounts that they use that, and a lot of times it is casted ahead of time. Now, there could be kind of dynamics, like, for example, my friend was on School of Hard Knocks, and they had arranged a meetup beforehand, but he approached him, like, as soon as he got out of the car, and, like, he didn't know that that was going to happen. Like, he didn't know that it was going to happen kind of in that way, and it's, like, their most viewed video. I think it did like, 100 million views, so... you can definitely cast it and engineer it. Like, even though it's Man on the Street, it doesn't necessarily have to be, and I hesitate to say authentic because I still think like the dynamics are authentic in terms of the value that should be being provided in that kind of dynamic or conversation. But yes, you like, especially if you have a storytelling background where you're coming from another place where maybe you worked on commercials or something else, definitely leverage that skill set. Just know that you're going to have to adapt kind of that skill set and learning to this medium, because social media is very different than other mediums and how people interact with the content.
And then when you think about so many different platforms, and I'm sure that if we catch up in 5 years, we'll probably be talking about other platforms as well. YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn. Simon Squibb, I know, is a great example of going kind of heavy on all of them. What do you see are the big differences when it comes to capturing people's attention? Or actually, if you just do it the right way, you'll get attention wherever you are.
Well, there's so there's a few different elements to that. One, there's certain formats that apply themselves to different formats or to different platforms. And then there's subtle nuances in terms of the user interface and how people have been trained to engage with content that can dictate performance. So, for example, TikTok is a platform where it's a little less polished. People don't really kind of want that polished nature to the content versus Instagram is kind of a little bit more towards that. So, like, Man on the Street can work for both of them, but there may be different dynamics in terms of like how you open kind of like the first 3 seconds or captions or title cards or sounds or things of that nature. So there's definitely subtle differences to each one. Typically, what I recommend people do as they're starting out to learn this art form is really focus on dialing in one and perfecting kind of the process with one. But that doesn't mean you can't post that content on other platforms. Still go ahead and post the platform on other platforms, but focus really on the nuances of one so that you can get that flow kind of going before you move to another one. Like an analogy is like, if you want to become a musician, you know, typically you start with one musical instrument and not, you know, try and learn five at the same time. So, you know, start with the piano first, master the piano and that exercise. Or like I watch a lot of kind of social media ads, and some of the ones I've been seeing is learning a language. And if you think about learning a language, is the first one outside of your native language is probably the hardest to learn. But once you've done it once, it sets you up for greater success to learn the next one and the next one and the next one. And it's similar with social media, is really dial in one, and just from a standpoint of perfecting the art form of like what it means to kind of understand the social dynamics of your communication. And then you can apply that process to other platforms that you want to scale up.
Nice. And then when you're thinking about, I'm a big lover of like psychology and principles and the fear of missing out and things like that. When you're thinking about campaigns and your own social media, how much thought process goes into like the psychology and the planning when it comes to those side of things?
There's a tremendous amount of thought that goes into it, because a majority of communication that we do as human beings, you know, on social media, off social media, is really delivered to the subconscious. So there's a lot of things that we do, like they say, I forget what the percentage, but there's a quote about like how much your body, your facial expressions, things of that nature communicate versus the actual words that you're saying. So we look at a lot of different dynamics from, you know, facial expressions, body cues, environment, tonality, the pacing, eye contact, along with other elements like storytelling elements of like, you know, what are, how are you delivering, you know, a promise of value in the first 3 seconds when consciously you may not even have the time to kind of process that quickly. So there's a lot of psychology that goes into communication on social media, and that goes to any type of communication. If you want to be an effective communicator in any format on any platform, you have to understand the dynamics of human psychology and human behavior at some level to become an expert.
And then when we think about like virality, so say some brands are great at capturing attention and they can go viral and they can have hundreds of thousands of followers and views, etc. How do you then turn that into the reason that everybody's doing that and turn that into customers and cash and leads and all of the good stuff that comes with it?
Yeah, it's a great question. So first off, people kind of make the mistake of misunderstanding the purpose of organic versus paid. Like organic content is really just to get people to know, like, and trust you. And if people know, like, and trust you, they're going to want to take that ultimate next step. I'll give you an example. So we had a client, a leather craftsman, that was really struggling with social media, had very little success in social media. And his business was selling leather goods. Like he makes wallets, handbags, purses, briefcases, things of that nature. So, you know, he was at like 2,000 followers or something. And what he was doing is approaching it as most businesses would, of like creating ads of his products, like cool product shots of a wallet or things of that nature. And it just wasn't breaking through. So we helped him design a format called Is It Worth It? Where basically he'll buy a $500 Chanel handbag, deconstruct it on screen, and tell you whether it's worth the money that you paid for it. So with that single format, he went from about 2,000 followers to 2.5 million across different platforms. Now, the interesting thing is he doesn't do any calls to action in any of his content. He just has a link in his bio. And previously, he was spending money on Google Ads, and he was generating about 10,000 visitors a month, and he was paying for every click. But once the organic started to take off, his traffic jumped to 100,000 visitors a month, and his most expensive products he couldn't keep on the shelf. And the answer is why? Well, because he built so much trust and credibility with his audience, he played that generalist principle where the audience size grows so big that ultimately, you know, a percentage of those people just want to take that next step and buy people or buy the next thing. You look at what Mr. Beast is doing with, you know, Feastables and, you know, the Beast Burger and his new lunch product and things of that nature. Is that if you build that relationship and that trust and credibility with your audience, they're ultimately going to want to take that next step. With that said, there's a lot of things that you can and should put into process to capitalize off of that audience. One is we highly recommend that you do have paid backed into that because, again, even with an audience of a few hundred thousand people, each post you're getting, you're likely not reaching 100% of that audience. So you can, one, make sure that you reach 100% of that audience, but also get a frequency going where there's more likelihood that they're going to purchase. So paid can be a real benefit to organic strategy because a paid can create, you can leverage assets that are more direct response driven where, you know, you've warmed this audience up with organic content. You're not making the sale. You're not making the sale. You're not making the sale. And then you retarget them with a paid and you say, hey, I know you've been watching my, I'm not saying you use this language, but hey, thanks for watching my content. Why don't you go check out our product and service here? On top of that, there's other layers of like, okay, if you're sending traffic to a website, is the website dialed in? Like, are you optimizing every step of your funnel? Like, are you testing different variations of a homepage or landing page? Are you capturing emails? You know, what is your email strategy and things of that nature? So organic definitely gives you that big burst, but like the paid and the other side of making sure that you're maximizing conversion, maximizing the lifetime value of a customer and things of that nature is where it cohesively kind of comes together to really push and scale a business.
So do you feel, Brendan, that people or businesses, should they be focusing on the business and the growth of social media for the business? So you look at Duolingo, great example of that. Or do you think they should be putting all of their time into the personal branding side of things. I think more so Stephen Bartlett and then companies underneath. What do you think is the game plan there?
It's a really smart question without a clear answer. And I think it comes down to who are the people involved in the business. Like, not everybody can be Stephen Bartlett, you know, like not everybody can be Elon Musk. Not everybody wants to be in front of the camera. And listen, there's more, it is a little bit easier to build a personal brand than a company brand, but the reason is companies can't get out of their own way. And typically a personal brand is not always trying to sell you something. I'm not saying that, I'm sure you can find a bunch of examples of personal brands that are always trying to sell something, but there's more of a relational storytelling, conversational aspect of communicating with a human being versus a brand. With that said, you know, Duolingo is the perfect example. They killed it, you know, a multi-billion dollar company because they just understood the dynamics of organic social media. So yes, a personal brand, it can lend itself to a little bit of an easier road, but it's not right for everybody. In addition, like if you're a company and you're the founder, you don't want to be in front of the camera. So you know, have like an employee do it. Well, that employee can leave or something can happen to that. So, and there's ways to overcome these issues. But I think it's really more of a business by business decision. I can definitively tell you like businesses can have success on social media. Again, they just have to get out of their own way. And you know, just because you're doing a personal brand doesn't mean you're going to be successful, but that's, I kind of tackle that based upon kind of who's involved in a business, what are the resources they have available, what are the types of stories they can tell and things of that nature.
And I feel like everything when it comes to like content and social media, it feels like it is the last decade that's really kicked off. And then even more so probably the last 5 years with content and kind of grasping to grab people's attention. I feel like I'd probably be a fool if I didn't get your opinion. What do you think when you think about the next 5-10 years with AI coming in? Is it going to be harder to get people's attention? Is it going to be harder to be a content creator? What are some of your predictions and what should people be doing to get there first?
I don't think it's going to be any harder. I think it's going to be the same level of difficulty it is today. I think that people see AI as a solution, and it's not a solution, it's just a tool. And like the analogy I use is if every single person on social media woke up tomorrow and was using AI, there's going to be winners and losers. Like, because again, it's a retention game. It's like, who's the best storyteller? And the people that are going to win are going to be the best storytellers. You know, AI is just a tool and it's a very powerful tool. And a lot of people are going to be using it to create social media content. But if you don't understand the fundamentals of storytelling, then you're not going to be successful even if you have AI. Because AI, you know, there's two critical components, as you know, is there's the prompting part and the data part. Like, what are you using to prompt? What are the data set that you're using to push into it? And what is your ability to analyze the output to determine whether or not that thing is good or not? Now, the AI tools will get smarter and smarter and smarter to help you on that. But again, it's just going to go back to the core of like, what is your understanding, your company's understanding, your team's understanding of storytelling on these platforms that will allow you to succeed or fail with it? Because again, you're going to see a lot of people, and I'm sure this happened, you know, I don't have the data on it, but I'm sure this happened with ChatGPT as everybody jumps on board and like, oh my God, I'm going to write a book with ChatGPT or something like that. Like, that's actually a perfect example is how many AI books are written, but how many are actually good? You know, it's just like probably not a lot of them. And that system will get better, but they'll still be the people that have the experience and understanding what a good and a bad story is ultimately going to win in the end.
And before we let you go, can you think of any brands or examples of people that, when it comes to capturing attention, doing it in the right way, who's kind of forefront of mind at the moment for you that in terms of they're absolutely bossing it?
Well, from an influencer perspective, you know, Mr. Beast, I mentioned Mark Rober, does an amazing job. He's another influencer. There's another amazing account called Veritasium that's based on science. And I think he's got like 20 million subscribers on YouTube, but breaks down. And this is just another pure example of taking a niche subject like science, which is not typically interesting to the wider possible audience, and you know, applying it to the general audience, I think is a great example. You know, we talked about, you know, Simon Squidworth, which I think is doing an amazing job with the man on the street format. You had mentioned Stephen Bartlett from a podcast perspective. I think, you know, if you want to get into a podcast, that's another thing that people don't really understand, the experience that you're creating in that kind of environment. That's, you know, I think people think it's a lot easier when they watch like a Stephen Bartlett or a Joe Rogan or a Lex Friedman. There is a lot of kind of engineering in terms of like that conversation that happens. And again, like the exercise I'll give you if you want to create a podcast is to put one of your podcasts next to a Stephen Bartlett podcast or Joe Rogan or Lex Friedman or whatever you aspire to be, and play them side by side and kind of sense the kind of differences in the dynamics there. So those are kind of a few that I can think of. I would check out our client Tanner Leatherstein has done an amazing job with his Is It Worth It format too. Somebody that's not as socially outgoing as like a Simon Squibb or something like that. He has like a true down to earth personality of somebody running a small business that could be a good example for people to kind of see where they don't have a lot of experience in social media, but getting into it and really mastering the art form.
I feel like I hear so many people say stuff like, oh, I could never do that. That could never be me. It wouldn't work for me. And I think that actually it's probably limiting beliefs getting in the way that if some of the examples that you spoke about, not anybody can do it, because I think that'd be naive to say, but I think definitely the right people can make it happen.
Yeah, and we hear that a lot. And I would say, if you tell yourself you can't do it, you can't do it. I mean, you're just not going to do it. I always tell people is like, you do not need to be on social media to have a successful business. There's so many different ways you can build a successful business without social media. I've done it. Now, social media provides a massive edge if you can master it. And it's a little bit more difficult to build a business depending on kind of the market that you're in and the competitive landscape. But I never push people into it. And I also, with our company, we never want to work with somebody that says, I hate social media, but I feel like I have to do it. If you hate it, like, how do you plan to get good at anything that you hate?
Yeah.
So, like, I never try and push people there, but, like, I think you bring up a great point, and I think people should really ask themselves, well, why do you think you can't do it? Like, because definitively every industry, every subject matter, like look at Neil deGrasse Tyson. That's another example, you know, an astrophysicist on social media, killing it, like talking about space. Graham Hancock, you know, he doesn't really have his own social media, but being on podcasts and things of that nature has really brought up interest of like past lost civilizations, and that goes viral and things of that nature. So I think just asking yourself, why do you think that you wouldn't be good at it? You know, and really get to the bottom of it, because everybody is represented on social media, and you can point to successful use cases of every type of industry, sector, background, personality type, communication level.
Yeah. And if you're passionate about it, then the chances are that there are going to be other people out there that will be passionate about it or might find passion about it.
You may know him. I'm blanking on the name, but there's a guy that loves trains. Like, and he's like super viral. Like he just takes tour of trains, like, and goes on trains, and like, it's his enthusiasm that just like spills over. Like you can see his love and joy for it. I have no interest in trains, but to see him kind of explain it, his excitement and things, it makes it kind of spills through the screen to kind of, you know, cross over to you.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember what his name is. Something like Hugo Bothwell or something like that. Some, some posh name, but yeah, no, it's an amazing. Brendan, thank you so much for joining us today. I've been really looking forward to this and being able to pick your brains. Your books are amazing for anybody that's looking to grow on social media, understand psychology, stand out. Both of your books are incredible. If people want to work with you or they want to get in touch with you, where can they find you? How should they get in touch? What kind of people should be getting in touch with you?
So you can go to hookpoint.com to learn more about our business and kind of just what we do. Also for your audience, my third book, The Guide to Going Viral, they can get a download, a free PDF version of it at hookpoint.com/wham, W-H-A-M. So again, there's no charge or anything if they want to kind of learn more in depth. That whole book is about the model that I broke down today. And my other two books, Hook Point and 1 million followers, you can get at my website, brendanjkane.com. But yeah, you can look more of our content on Instagram or LinkedIn. But if you're kind of interested in digging in more, I would check out the latest book or go to hookpoint.com.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Brendan.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure to connect with you and everybody that was tuning in today.